So I wanted to take just a couple of minutes to talk to you about talking, to communicate about communication, and to speak specifically about how the way that God chose to communicate with us can give us some guidance in terms of how we should communicate with one another. And the first lesson that we get from God is that we should use more than one mode of communication. We do not receive one Torah. We receive two, right? There's a Torah Shebaal Peh, there is an oral Torah, and there's a Torah Shebichtav, there's a written Torah. And Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmani, who I think not coincidentally, is a maturgaman, right? His profession is to be someone who hears the lecture and then makes it audible and comprehensible to the audience. He says you should know that these two Torot, the oral Torah and the written Torah, are actually not interchangeable. The written Torah has a certain character. It is the Torah that is supposed to be the transcription of God's speech. It's public, it's definitive. And Torah Shebaal Peh has a more soft quality, has a more human quality, has a more historical quality, and also has a more intimate quality. The written Torah is the public Torah, and the oral Torah is the private Torah. It's the Torah that's just for us. So Rabbi Yehuda Bar Nachmani says, Ketiv, one verse says, Ketov lecha tazrim ha'ela. You need to write these words down. Uchtiv, and then another verse says, Ki alpi hadarim ha'ela. Because these words were spoken alpi, right? They're oral. So what do I do with these two psukim that both describe the Torah? Ha-ketzad, how can this exist? And you would expect him to say there was some sort of oral transmission that ended up being somehow visual, and that's how we're able to have the oral and the written exist at the same time. And instead he says, no, actually, these are parallel Torot. Dvarim shebichtav, the Torah that is written down, iyatar rashay lo'omran alpeh. You're not allowed to speak these words orally, by memory. Dvarim shebaalpeh, and the words that came to us orally, iyatar rashay lo'omran bichtav. You're actually not allowed to write them down in a written format. Right, so the first lesson that I think we have to learn from God in terms of communication, and this is something that we all know but need to be reminded of, we have so many different ways to communicate, and that means we have so many ways to communicate in the wrong way. Just to sort of give you an example, you know, imagine if I were to be trying to get together with Rav Aviva. I would like to see Rav Aviva for coffee. So I send her a text, and I say, hey, where are you? And then 3 days later, I go to check my mail, and in my mailbox is a letter from Rav Aviva. It has the date, has the address, and it says, Dear Dina, thank you so much for your inquiry into my whereabouts. I would like you to know that on Wednesday at 3:15, I was actually in the Beit Midrash listening to you give a Dvar Torah, so I was not able to see you for coffee. Fond regards, Aviva. Right, there's a mismatch there between the way that I reached out to Aviva and what I was trying to accomplish with that message and how Aviva chose to respond to me. I mean, more seriously, right, we have an understanding, but we really need to take this to heart, right, that when someone experiences a loss, you could convey the message of, I care about you, and I'm sorry about your loss, by tweeting at them. But we know that there's actually an implied hierarchy of communication. You go in person. If you can't go in person, you pick up the phone. If you don't know their phone number, you send them a card. If you don't have their address, you write them a nice email. And that's where it ends, where you actually can't do anything lower than an email. Right?
Put it on Facebook.
Hashtag Baruch Dayan HaEmet. Right? You just can't do that. So the first lesson, right, that God teaches us in giving us a Torah that has more than one format is that we need to be sensitive the way that God was, that the message and the format need to match. And every time you want to communicate with someone, you need to think, am I communicating with them in a way that matches the message? That's the first lesson. You want your message and your format to match. But the second, and this is the dimension that I like to focus on a little bit more, because I think it's a little bit less intuitive, is that we're not only learning about how to communicate a message, but we're also learning about how to communicate to a recipient. And we have a description of the way that God gave the Torah and God's voice. And this is a midrash that appears in a number of places. I'm quoting the version from the Tanhuma. Hayacha kol yotze, how did God's voice emerge? Eitzel kol Yisrael, kol echad v'yachad lefi kocho. Actually, it went to each person in Israel according to that person's capacity. The elderly according to their capacity. The young according to their capacity. Babies according to their capacities. Fetuses according to their capacity. Moshe had his own mode. Right? And the Midrash describes that each person got a transmission that matched them, right? That they could hear. And so, right, the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Kol Adonai Bakoach, God's voice is in power. It's not Kol Adonai Bakocho. It's not that God's voice is a reflection of God's own power, but that God's voice is a reflection of capacity. And what makes God's voice so special is that it's able to speak to each person in a way that that person can hear. And I've experienced a little bit of a dark side to there being so many different ways of communicating. And that is that everybody has their favorite mode. And almost everybody has their mode that they hate and they never use. I, for many years of my life, was very, very guilty of being exclusively email-focused. People who work with me might think that I am still in this stage. But you don't remember that in 2007, my answering machine in my apartment said, "Hi, you've reached Dina's answering machine. If you really want to reach me, my email address is..." And then I gave my email address. Because I wanted people to be able to reach me, and if they left me a voicemail, I'd never receive it. Right? And this happens to us frequently. Let's say you have a child who is 25 and under, and you are a parent 45 and older, and you call your child and you leave them a voicemail. It's a minute and a half of detailed instruction. 7 hours later, you get a text, "Hey, what's up?" Right? And you think to yourself, didn't you listen to my soliloquy, right, that I left you on your voicemail? And your child says to you, "Nobody's listened to voicemail since 2005. Right? Where have you been?" And our instinct, right, when we notice that we have these different ways of communicating, is to do what I did on my answering machine, is to try to insist that everybody communicate with me in my preferred mode, to, you know, lobby for the superiority, right, of text message over Facebook message, to, you know, to go to the net for phone calls over emails. But that's not the way that God chose to communicate with us, right? God instead decided to reach out to us in the way that we wanted to be reached out to. And there's a tremendous imitatio Dei opportunity in this world that we have of varied communication, that we learn about one another the way that we want to be communicated with. And when I want to speak to Mikey, I find out from Mikey's friends how does Mikey like to be reached, and that's the way that I reach out to him. And in that way, I'm sending two messages, right? I'm sending the message of my message, and I'm also sending the message of, I want you to be able to hear it, right? I care about you as the recipient, so I'm going to tailor my communication style to you because I want you to be listening to me and to hear that I'm communicating with you and not communicating at you. There's another midrash that I really, really love about God's communication. It's about God's initial communication with Moshe at the burning bush. God says to Moshe, "Anochi Elohei Avicha, I am the God of your father." Seems like a very non-specific, non-scary introduction. And, excuse me, Rabbi Yeshua Cohen says that God was being very specific in the way that he chose to reach out to Moshe. Because Moshe, at the beginning of his career as a prophet, was a tiron. He was a trainee. He was a PIT. He was a prophet in training. Right? He didn't know what God sounded like. He didn't know what the expectations were, what the rules were of prophecy. And when God wants to reach out to him, God thinks to God's self, you know, if I speak to Moshe with my full voice, he's going to be afraid. I'm going to frighten him. I can't reach out to him in my full voice. But if I try to overcorrect for that, and I try to reach out to him in a very quiet and gentle voice, Moshe's going to kind of disparage prophecy. Right? Prophecy's going to seem silly. Right? The squeaky voice came to me from this burning bush. I don't have to take that seriously. So God finds the middle path. And this is so beautiful. God decides that he's going to speak to Moshe in the voice of Moshe's father. Because he thinks that this is the voice that Moshe is going to be most receptive to. So God calls out and God says, Moshe. And then Moshe responds, Hineni, I'm here. Ma ava mivakesh. What does my father want from me? Why did you call me? And then God says, Moshe, I'm actually not Avicha. I'm not your father. I'm Elohei Avicha. I am the God of your father. Right? And that's why God introduces God's self first as the God of Moshe's father, because the voice that God used to speak to Moshe is Moshe's father's voice. This midrash is beautiful, just hearing it. When you think about it even more, it becomes even more beautiful and even more challenging, because Moshe didn't grow up with his father. Moshe probably didn't know what his father's voice sounded like. So what does it mean to say that God spoke to Moshe in Moshe's father's voice, and Moshe was able to hear that and recognize and say, Abba, what do you want? Right? And I think it's not that God chose to have the pitch of his voice sound like Moshe's father, but that he spoke to Moshe in a fatherly tone, in a tone that conveyed concern, in a tone that conveyed love, in a tone that was educational, but a tone that Moshe intuitively understood was, oh my gosh, my father is talking to me. And then God says, it's not oh my gosh, but it's oh my God, I'm Elohei Avicha, I'm the one who's talking to you. Right? And this tells us something extremely important about tone. Right? And tone is one of the modes that we've sacrificed the most as we've encountered these many different ways of communicating, that we're always a little tone deaf, right, in the way that we communicate, and we have to be really sensitive to that. And the last lesson to learn is from Moshe's response. Moshe is so excited to hear his father's voice, and he says so, right? Moshe's so excited to hear his father, and he says, Abba, what do you want? What can I do for you? And a lot of us have very glutted inboxes. A lot of us receive a lot of communication, and it becomes kind of weary. It becomes really difficult to respond to each request with a full sentence, with a sense that I've received your message, I'm processing it, and I'm responding to it. But I think Moshe presents us with a nice model, with a nice challenge. Right? This person who he hasn't heard from in years and years and years, Moshe doesn't respond, where were you? Moshe responds, here I am. What does my father want from me?